One of the really wonderful things about Catholics is that we take this gospel so closely to heart. There's almost no Catholic church anywhere in the world that you will go into. The people haven't left the seats of honor at the front of the church available for those who might come who are more important than them. Everyone likes to sit at the back so that they allow these places of honor to be kept at the very front of the church. It's always a bit of a worry as the priest if we go down and we take that seat that presumably is the place of honor. You kind of think, maybe the bishop will come, maybe someone else will come that is higher, and I'll have to make my way down and sit with the rest of you there. What this gospel, of course, points to is that deep sense that is so often present in the human experience of religion. That way in which something that is meant to be so wonderful, so good, and yet it can be so easily corrupted. The story is told of this friendship that had developed between a priest and the local rabbi in the medieval church. And they'd been talking and sharing and comparing scripture passages for many years. And a deep friendship and respect had begun to grow. And of course, the priest had longed that the rabbi would understand the message and the revelation that Jesus indeed was the Messiah. And so it came time that the rabbi said, well, actually, I'm going to go to Rome for business, but I want to just to see what it is that you've been telling me about, to go to the very center of your church and to see, you know, what if the claims that you are making are true. And the priest was really worried about this because it was the time of the Medici papacy, a time of great corruption in the history of the church. And the priest was just thinking, oh no, this will be the end. You know, once the rabbi sees this great wealth and ostentatious displays, once he sees all of this corruption, all of the wealth and the power that the papacy had taken onto itself, you know, there's no way that the rabbi will then convert. There's no way that he will then become Catholic. So the rabbi does indeed make his way to Rome. And then when he comes back, he comes to see the priest once again. And the priest is, you know, is expecting the very worst from this meeting. But in fact, the rabbi says, okay, now I see. Now I want to become a Catholic. And the priest is just taken completely back by this. You know, how could you do this after you saw all of that corruption, all of that dismay, everything that can go wrong with religion? You know, you see that unfolding in Rome. And the rabbi said, well, I thought if this was simply a human institution, if this was simply something that was founded on the faith of men and women, then it would have folded, you know, within the first century after the time of Jesus. But in spite of this corruption, in spite of this decay, this institution, this people have continued to worship God. And so God must be at the very center of this. And that's something in the midst of crises, in the midst of abuse scandals, in the midst of so many things that can go wrong in our church, when mere human beings, when mere men are in control, and we don't allow that sense of the presence of God to really be at the heart of our experience. When we see just those frailties, when we see the sinfulness of our church, and we don't allow that to go beyond that into that experience of God, the way that God continues to lead and guide his church, the way that God continues to call us into that perfection. This gospel, of course, is addressed particularly at priests, at leaders within the Christian community, but it's meant for all of us as well. I remember when I was a teenager, my dad was a builder, and I would go and work with him at various times. And I remember we were working down in Bega on the Bega showground, and there was a very, you know, important and prestigious woman in the town who was the chair of the Bega Show Society. And I was there working one day. I was probably, you know, 13 or 14 years old, and she called out, "Oh, Mr. Healy, can you come?" And I was just, you know, looking around to see where Dad was, you know, that why was she calling Dad? And then she called again and then looked at me, and I was like, oh, she's talking to me. And I, you know, Mr. Healy meant my father. It never occurred to me that I could possibly earn that title. I mean, it was just because she couldn't remember my first name, and so she used the title for that. But I just remember, like, the first time that someone addressed me with a title, and it's this, you know, memory that is so very strong in my consciousness, in my mind. But, you know, the titles, of course, are not the center of this experience. You know, it's not saying that you shouldn't call me Father. Of course, you don't have to call me Father. You're quite welcome just to call me Richard, because of my baptismal identity is a very part of my experience of being a Christian. That among you, that is my first and most proud identity, to be a baptized person within the community of the church. But this isn't against the taking of titles. It's against the calling of titles. It's against that honor that we want for ourselves, that we beg for ourselves, that the wanting to be more important than we are. And it's the same with this experience of the wearing of broader phylacteries. Last week we heard Jesus tell us that what is the first commandment. And he said, you know, love the Lord your God with all your heart, your soul, and your mind. That was in fulfillment of the Shema, the prayer that every good and faithful Jew would take upon their lips at least twice a day, if not more. And you can read there in the book of Deuteronomy in chapter 6, the first giving of the Shema, the law of the Hear, O Israel, the Lord is God, the Lord is one, and you shall love the Lord your God. That was commanded to people to be worn upon their hands, on the wrists of their arms, to be worn around their head. It's that very wonderful and beautiful devotion to remember those words of the Lord. In fact, it's likely that Jesus himself wore this phylactery around his arm and around his head. But that's not the problem. The problem is making it bigger. The problem is making it more obvious. The problem is the ornation of that experience, saying, look how big and broad and wonderful and beautiful this is, because this is a sign of how devoted I am, of how pious I am, of how good I am. And that's that first beginning of the possible corruption of religion. Religion isn't something that, and that's the beginning of that phrase, of something we wear simply on our sleeve. It's the change of our hearts. It's the giving over of our hearts and souls to the Lord. That's what we are called to do.